Today's Fight Disciples podcast is brought to you in association with Athletic Greens, the lifestyle-friendly multivitamin. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, we've got you covered. Contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, while still tasting good. It supports better sleep quality and recovery. It supports mental clarity and alertness, which I can obviously give the thumbs up to. As I'm sure you're aware, tons of people take some type of multivitamin, and it's important to choose one with high quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing that you can do every single day to take care of yourself. We've a little bit more on our journey with Athletic Greens featured in today's MMA podcast, so make sure you tune into that. But to make it easy for you, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples. That's athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode number 644. We are the Fight Disciples. This one is all about MMA. We've got some UFC previews coming your way, but we are singing from the rooftops about the PFL. Yes, that's right. Before we get stuck into it, you can subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Our website is fightdisciples.com for all other feeds, including our social media. And on YouTube, if you like to watch stuff, we are on Fight Disciples. Simple as that. Going to have a little bit of a nosy. We only started that in January, the Fight Disciples YouTube channel, properly putting the podcast up there and various other little bits. Thank you very much if you're already a subscriber and consume your podcast that way. If you're not, come on, man. Come and join the party. Come and be a part of this on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. We hope to bring you a lot of UFC 282 content over the next 2 to 3 weeks to finish off the year in style, because you will have seen loads of people getting upset that from December the 17th through to January the 14th, there is no UFC. All the shows are just being put on hold for the holiday season. So there's not going to be too much to talk about. So we're going to finish the year off in style. So make sure you're on our YouTube channel, because hopefully we'll bring you boatloads of visual content on that.
Vegas, baby!
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. This is going to be an emotional one for me, because yeah. I think
Kayla
I did.
Harrison, I know you're a big fan of Kayla Harrison, aren't you? I knew this was going to be an emotional one for you. Yeah. You know what I'll do is, even though you're from Blackburn and you live on the outskirts, I'll let you go full Mancunian today. I'll sign that off.
Thanks, mate. Very rarely, do I cry after a fight.
Jesus. Very rarely mate. Do I cry after a wank.
What? Mate, it's so hard. When it's so hard not to cry after a wank. Yeah.
No, it was listen. So hard. I had to.
Doing the gig that we do and being around the people that we're around, whether it be at the start of the journey, the end of the journey, the middle, wherever they are, right? Sometimes it's incredibly hard to not get emotionally invested in a fighter's journey, especially if you see it from the inside. A lot of obviously fight fans, of which we are, absolutely. You see it externally. You see the trials and tribulations that play out in the octagon or the cage. You see the things from training camps and what have you, maybe the way that people are treated and the way that things don't necessarily go their way. And you can't help but feel for those people. But when you are a little bit closer and, you know, you spend time with someone, you have proper conversations with someone, it's very hard sometimes to not get emotionally invested in a fighter's journey. And I think for a lot of British fight fans, I think a lot of people over the last 5 years in particular have been incredibly emotionally invested in Brendan Loughnane's journey, Obviously, everybody knows about what happened with the Contender Series in the UFC. But even before that, you kind of had that connection to him because, one, he's a top bloke. Yeah. And two, there was always that, why have the UFC not signed him? Why is he not going on the UFC? So therefore, the decisions that he makes in order to get himself on that Contender Series, you were already in. Then the Contender Series doesn't play out. But I think the ride that he took us on from that moment to Saturday night, you can't help but root for a kid like that. His attitude towards work, his attitude towards life, his attitude towards dealing with adversity is an example to a lot of people. A lot of people get beaten by circumstance. Everybody knows that circumstance is only 10% of the situation. 90% of the situation is what is going on between your ears. Yeah. And Brendan Lochnan is a type of character that you want with you at any stage of your life. If you need a pep talk, if you need a little bit of a pick-me-up, if you need a little bit of something, Brendan Lochnan's the type of dude that you want alongside you. And for him to realize his moment on Saturday night, it was incredibly hard not to get emotional about it, especially when the kid is sat there lost for words. He's never lost for words. He's a gobby fucker, right? He's never lost for words. He's always got something to say. But he's completely lost for words, completely overcome by emotion, and his mum's alongside him. Both of them just holding $1 million check, and you just think to yourself, fuck me, man. Sometimes nice guys do win. Yeah. And that was that moment on Saturday night. I could not be more delighted for that lad. Could not be more delighted for him.
Yeah, I think the fact that we've, as you say, we've spent time away from the octagon, the cage with him. We've spent time with someone you invest in their personality. They become almost friends. You know, he is friends. So obviously, you know how much they put into it, and you know how much they sacrifice. You know, you can count on one hand the number of times Brendan has had Christmas dinner with his mum in the last 10 years. That's just a fact. There's no stone he's left unturned. And he's a career, if you look at the history of his career, it's full of no's. It's full of rejection. You know, the tough thing didn't work out for him. His UFC tenure was short-lived. Then he came back on the Contender Series, wins a fight, shoots for a takedown at the end, which fucking Dominic Cruz used to do, fucking Robert Whittaker did against Taylor. Fucking, you could lose count of the number of fighters that have done that over the years just to try and rubber stamp a victory. And yet Dana makes an example of him for absolutely no reason whatsoever. It's just insane that he came away and then he went into PFL and then he's become a name in the PFL and he's built on the back of big performances. Then he was instrumental in the PFL COVID. Getting a Channel 4 deal. Then he had the COVID. Fucking, right. It's just been absolutely one closed door in front of another. And he's just refused to accept it. He's just refused to accept his career wasn't going to play out maybe as he'd hoped. And he has worked his balls off it's hard to say he's worked more than any other fighter, but he certainly, there's not many that have worked harder than him. Let's put it that way.
No.
Because he will sacrifice everything to get this single-minded ambition off the ground, to get him to a place where he can truly say, and I'm glad he said it at the weekend, I am one of the best featherweights in the world. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You've just won a tournament where you had 4 fights inside 8 months to win a championship belt and a $1 million check. Who the fuck else could do that? Tell me the featherweights in the UFC that would be able to turn around 4 fights in 8 months. It's a different kind of mentality. And most featherweights in the UFC would be like, get the fuck, I'm not doing that. Most featherweights, period, would say no to that. And yet his mentality has been, no, this is what I've got to do to get to where I've got to get to. Then I'm going to do it. And he's one of them. He never moans about it. All he does is work. All he does is sacrifice. And you're right. It literally couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I'm absolutely over the moon for him. Like, again, unbelievable. It's 1,256 days since Dana White said, we're not signing him. We got to take down. I think Dana White's exact words to the media were, if you want to sign him, start your own promotion, you sign him, good luck with that. That's what he said. 1,256 days ago, he said that. Good luck signing him. Kids just won a championship belt. Prove to the world he's top 10 featherweights in the world. I'm adamant of that. He's one of the best featherweights in the world. Yeah. And hopefully, if the New York IRS hasn't fucking raped him, pillaged him everywhere, he's got $1 million in the bank to show for it as well.
And to do it in the manner that he did it.
Mega. Mega.
Even, I'll be honest.
Bubba Jenkins the first round. I've got to be honest. Bubba Jenkins won the first round.
I did.
It was the Brendan show.
Yeah. I actually think performance-wise, Brendan last year when he fell short to Movley in the semi-final, fight on fight, he was better last year. This year, he's had to muddle his way through certain things and come over adversity within fights. I think his first two fights in particular on this particular season, Brendan will say himself, they weren't his best performances. I mean, he walked into that first fight, if you remember, with the knee sleeves on. So I'm thinking to myself, fuck, he's not blown his fucking knees out as he's coming into this. Jesus, this kid can't get a break. But he muddled his way through it. He managed to get the victory. Obviously, then you have the big fight with the massive head gash in there and what have you.
Well, that was a late opponent, if you remember. Huskich was brought in because Boston Salmon pulled out. So, and then he got the fucking the cuts, and you're like, oh my God. But then Brendan will probably say, that was always how I was going to win it. I was always going to win it by taking the long and winding road.
Yeah. But then obviously the Chris Weidt fight is the one where you think to yourself, we're here now. Because that was supposed to be the fight that he lost. And I know that there's super pressure on him because he's doing it in London. There's loads of eyes on him. It's the opportunity for fans to actually come and see him because he's been doing this throughout the whole of pandemic and behind closed doors and all this type of shit. He's been away from home. But that night he rose. That night he went to the next levels and he put manners on Chris Weidt that night, and he'd most certainly earned his spot in this final against Bubba Jenkins. And the way that he took Bubba Jenkins apart was just phenomenal. Bubba won the game. It was a tight first round. But Bubba won that first round, in my opinion.
Yeah, it does.
But the leg kicks were money. Just consistent work, the way that he switches his stance, the way that he keeps Bubba guessing, the way that he mastered range in the second round. It took him a tiny bit of time just to get used to what Bubba was going to do. And then in that second round, he mastered range and you could just see the gears changing. He just went, yeah, come on then. We're playing my game now, Sunshine, and we're going to do it this way. Bubba couldn't fucking sink him. One of the best wrestlers in the PFA, in the whole division, right across all promotions. One of the best. He's a D1 wrestler. Couldn't fucking sink the dude on his ass. He was unbelievable, his takedown defense. His mastery range was absolutely sensational. He went through the gears. His leg kicks to that front leg, just chopping it up, took Bubba's base completely away.
That was the magic.
Took the base completely away. Bubba can't do fuck all with him. And then when the moment came in that fourth round, he sniffed it, he landed it, and he fucking took him out. Absolutely outstanding performance. And he did it at Madison Square Garden, mate. Jesus Christ.
Mega. In front of his mum.
Fairy tale of New York, baby.
Yeah.
Fairy tale.
In front of his mum as well. Just sensational stuff. You know, there's not enough ways to describe it. Just watching that was just give me so much joy. And that's how you want to do it, man. You know, you want to get to the final. You want to face a little bit of adversity. Not too much, a little bit of adversity. He took a big right hand in the first round, which Bubba then immediately shot after, but he just couldn't get Brendan down. Stayed on his feet. And then in the last 30 seconds, Bubba landed a left hook. A lead left hook with his southpaw stance. Lands a lovely cuff and left hook as well, but Brendan just swallowed it. And then after that, but already in the first round, even though he lost it, he was kicking away at that front leg, just kicking away at that front right leg base of Bubba Jenkins, which just stopped him from being able to shoot for takedowns. You know, as much as it takes the base away from a puncher, you're taking the base away from a wrestler as well, because if you take that front leg, you're losing that power, that shot when he comes forward. Once again, for me, Brendan, just like against Chris Weidt, you've got to give credit to Brendan's corner team as well. You know, Brendan seems to be like this nomad of gyms and nomad of promotions. But his corner team, man, they got the tactics absolutely spot on. This is how we beat this guy. And I tell you what, there was a point there, might have even been the first round, where he's shuffling around, Southpaw Orthodox. And I'm sitting there thinking, somewhere in California, Dominic Cruz is sipping a little herbal tea like, That's my boy. Because there was real twinges of Dominic Cruz in that movement, that scatty movement constantly. Am I southpaw or am I orthodox? Am I southpaw or am I orthodox? And I think that throws Bubba Jenkins off as well, because he's like, which leg do I fucking shoot for? Because there's no front leg, because he's constantly switching it round. And, mate, I think once he got into a role in the second round, once he got into that ascendancy, once he forgot about the moments, forgot about the his mum, the $1 million, the pressure, because everyone's thinking about that, you know? And that's why Bubba gets a shot, immediately shoot, get me to my comfort zone, a little bit of wrestling, right, I'm in the fight now, I'm in my zone. Brendan needed to have that moment where he was like, click, 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 right, okay, now I'm in my zone. And once he was in his zone, it was about levels. Brendan Loughnane's just a better fighter than Bubba Jenkins, a better mixed martial artist. To prove it on the big stage, to rubber stamp it, you're on your way to a points decision, man, but to rubber stamp it with the finish as well, sensational stuff. And listen, there's a good chance we could have a stadium, UFC stadium fight next year. Hey, he may not have signed them 1,256 days ago, but if there's not a serious conversation going on ahead of a potential stadium fight in the UK about signing the PFL champion next year, then the UFC ain't doing their job. And believe me, they do their job.
Love it, mate. I fucking love it. Absolutely love it. Not a, just a diamond geezer. And as well as that, it also now makes me super excited for Till's return. Because them two have been like thick and thieves working together. Brendan Loughnane is a fantastic person to be around. He's just infectious character, and it'll rub off on Till. And you can see it. You can see, like, having conversations with Till, the way that he's talking, the way that he's being. He's obviously going to be inspired by what Brendan did at the weekend. Good times, man. Good times. I'm just delighted it happened. I didn't want him ever to be the woulda, shoulda, coulda, what if guy. He's not the what if guy now. No. He's the guy. He's absolutely exactly the guy, and he provided a moment at the weekend that'll live long with a lot of British fight fans. And if you stayed up to watch that in the early hours of Saturday morning, because it was Friday night, yeah, I'm sure you were just like me, just fucking either bawling your eyes out or just shouting at your television. I was crying. I'm going to be honest with you. I was sat there just going, he's fucking done it. Normally I'm yelling at the telly, but I was crying my eyes out like a fucking...
Yeah. Go and watch it. Listen, it was on Channel 4, so it shouldn't be hard to get on the Channel 4 player or whatever. So go back and just, if you want to, just watch that fight. It was absolutely unreal. Well, there was six championship fights on the PFL from the Hulu Center at the weekend. And, you know, most of them delivered as well. It was really disappointing, of course, for Stevie Ray. He was the other Brit in the finals as well. Stevie got through to the final of the lightweight division after back-to-back wins over Anthony Pettis, and ran into Oliver Obiang Mercier, to be fair. I thought Stevie had a great first round. He had that body triangle in. He was, he was in his wheelhouse, looking to never really push for a submission, but dominated the round by taking Mercier's back. But then, tell you what, the finish for Mercier was something quite special. Lovely southpaw right hook, lead right hook. Stevie didn't see it coming, and unfortunately, the ones you don't see coming are the ones that do the damage. Second round stoppage in favour of Mercier.
This night, you know, randomly, the more I think about the victories that have happened on this particular night, there's a lot of redemption here. So much redemption right across the whole of MMA. Like Rob Wilkinson, for example. I remember him obviously fighting Izzy on Izzy's debut in the UFC. Right. And obviously he gets turfed out the UFC and he goes off on this mad journey of, is he going to be a martial artist? Is he not going to be a martial artist? Yes, he is. He stays in it and he goes and rebuilds himself. And Rob Wilkinson's performance in his final was just outstanding, mate.
Incredible.
Absolutely outstanding. He was phenomenal. And even like Larissa Pacheco, who beat Kayla Harrison. I know that's the headline. Wow, she took Kayla Harrison's. Oh, yes, she did. But her journey to that point, she's been beaten by Kayla two previous occasions the PFL. Whether it be the first fight of the first season and the final of the first season, Kayla beat her. And she's been on a magic. It's just constant redemption all the way along on this particular night. Rob Wilkinson and Pacheco are just two that I'd highlight as just as equally as captivating as Brendan's story. Phenomenal the way that they've managed to get themselves to that situation. I thought Rob Wilkinson was brilliant.
Yeah, he was. He was brilliant. He was incredibly strong. And, you know, he's in there with an absolute veteran. You know, that guy that's fucking been there and done it at every single level in this sport, as they said on the commentary. And I quite enjoyed the commentary, I've got to be honest with you. I do like the PFL. I think the PFL on nights like this, especially, prove that, you know, the UFC are at the top of the tree. These are the second. This is the second best outfit in the sport of mixed martial arts.
I don't think so,
anyone can argue against that. I think the PFL, what they do, these tournament formats are massively engaging. So exciting. I think DAZN, you know, are really lucky to have them, and hopefully DAZN promote them the way it should be promoted, because, you know, you can invest here from April. Most of these fighters had their first fight in April, and they've had four fights now to become champion, and Rob Wilkinson saved the best till last. Again, Omari Akhmadov, a pioneer of Dagestani MMA.
He's had four finishes as Rob Wilkinson.
Of Dagestani MMA, a veteran, but to do it in the manner that Rob Wilkinson done it, he looked absolutely incredible. So strong, such a power striker, and it often happens. Listen, we've seen it before with people that go in with Conor McGregor and whatever else. You're going with Israel Adesanya. Everything after that's a fucking easier. You've been in with the best guy in the division. You move on from that, and you know, he's obviously come up to light heavyweight as well. He's filled out Rob Wilkinson, and he's been unreal. I don't think he's lost a fight since he lost to Izzy.
No. And four finishes in the whole of this PFL season to grasp that $1 million check. Sensational from him. Regarding Pacheco, like I said, she's been beaten twice previously by Kayla Harrison in that first season of the PFL. Then she fell short in the second season. Then we had COVID, and then it was on and off, and she was out for a long period of time. And obviously, she's come back this year, and she's been brilliant. She had three stoppages in the run-up to this particular final, and I just thought when they were stood there at the end, I really feel like this with MMA because of obviously the unified scoring criteria. So you kind of know that people are going to score the fight properly. But I just thought, please have scored this properly because she deserves it. Absolutely. Yeah. She lost the first round, I think, against Kayla. I thought Kayla was really good in the first round, but it was one of them very similar to Brendan where it was like going, not tonight, motherfucker. It's not happening again. It's not happening. Tonight's my night. And I'm going to show you. She was brilliant. Really, really good. And again, you've got to be delighted for someone like that just keeps coming back when the adversity and the nose and the circumstances are against you, because she's fighting the poster girl of the PFL and everybody, even me. Last week, I said, Kayla's going to do it again.
Yeah.
She was great to get that victory.
Excellent.
And again,
listen.
And this is what we're going to find out a lot more about Kayla now. You know, what are you all about? You've just been defeated for the first time in front of the world. What are you all about, kid? Let's see.
Exactly that. And I think Pacheco to come back. And again, we talk about Brendan winning four fights in 8 months. She won four fights in 7 months. And like Wilkinson, don't come at me and go, yeah, but three first round knockouts before she got to the final. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. But she still had an 8-week fight camp for every single one. It basically means that Pacheco has been in fight camp since February. She's not been out of camp since February. She's basically been in camp training, working towards getting a ghost off her shoulder, which is the fact that she's got two previous losses to the girl that she's inevitably going to meet in the final. So then to put in a performance like that in the final with that kind of money in the bank, absolutely incredible. Like, the whole event was just so engaging. It was wicked.
Yeah. Do you know something? I kind of enjoyed, I know that it was a bit of a weird one, but I kind of enjoyed the Aspen Ladd fight as well. I know that it ended up as a split decision with Julia Budd and what have you. But as a fight that sat in the middle that wasn't a title fight, I enjoyed it. I'm a little bit upset with Marlon Moraes. Yeah? You blew my accumulator out the water, mate. I had you. I thought you're going to end the knockout defeat run here, my man, against Sherman. And to be fair, you were winning the fight. I'm sat there going, money in the bank. Everybody's doing bits for me. Dakota DeChiever turned up and absolutely smoked the kid early doors. Sweet as. Brendan's going to win this final just to put the cherry on top of my cake. And then all of a sudden, Sherman Moraes goes, not today, Catterall. I can see that bet. Not today, lad. Bosh. Took Marlon Moraes out. Four knockout defeats on the spin now. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. And losses as well for Gilson Tibau and Jeremy Stevens, two other UFC veterans on the undercard as well. As well as Dakova's moment, though, as well. And that wasn't part of the Channel 4 broadcast, but I did get to see it on PFL's social media channels. I also got to see Biagio Ali Walsh, our mate Nico Ali Walsh's brother, the grandson of Muhammad Ali, and his absolutely incredible 45-second right cross knockout of the year, late contender. Mate, that was special. Jesus Christ. Talk about a chip off the old grandfather block there. What a shot that was. Good card,
good night.
A great card.
Good night, PFL. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well done to them. And we've got to keep reminding ourselves, they've only been going for what? 4 or 5 years? It's a baby organization. It's brand spanking new and already has captivated the audience because, one, it's easy to fucking understand, and two, the fights are bloody good. And when you're crowning champion after champion after champion after champion on the same night, and you're just dishing out million-dollar checks, you're thinking to yourself, fuck me, man. I'm all in on this. I love it in the immediate aftermath of the finals night. It happens every year, this, where you get fighters from other organizations chirping up.
Yeah.
Oh, dishing out $1 million now, are they? Right then, I'll fucking get involved in this. And I could take out Brendan Loughnane. Enter the tournament then.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Enter the tournament then, you dickhead. Yeah. Four fights in 4 months. It's not a one-hitter quitter where they've just won $1 million on the night. They've done it all year to get to the point. If you think you can do it, join the fucking tournament. It's exactly. As simple as that.
Exactly.
I'll fight you for $1 million. Of course you'd fight him for $1 million on a one night. Of course you would, you bell-end. Fucking fight him. Fight four fights before it.
Yeah, correct.
Jeez. Yuri Pachka, shall we go there first, news-wise?
Yes. Oh, shit, yes, of course.
There's two pieces of news. We'll start with Yuri Pachka, because it is an incredibly strange situation. And for those that don't know, that haven't been keeping up to date with Yuri, obviously, light heavyweight champion, beating Glover earlier in the year, was slated to fight on December the 10th at UFC 282 in the rematch against Glover for that light heavyweight championship. Last week, it was announced that he's blown his shoulder out in a wrestling style injury, of which he's going to require surgery, which could keep him out to up to a year. Okay. So the UFC obviously then went about trying to sort out the new main event for UFC 282. And loads of back and forth, loads of different bits of conversation have happened. And we now have a main event for UFC 282. That main event will be Magomed Ankalaev taking on the former champion Jan Błachowicz. It'll be a five-round fight. It was originally a three-round fight, co-main event at 282. It's been boosted to five rounds, and it will be for the full light heavyweight title, because Yuri Prochazka, in the aftermath of everything that happened last week, has now vacated the light heavyweight title in order for the division to move on. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And in the build-up to getting our new main event, Glover Teixeira, the former champion who was supposed to be fighting Yuri Prochazka, was offered a fight with Magomed Ankalaev for the full title, interim title, whatever it may be. And he opted to turn it down, asking for more time, wanted it for Brazil in January. Could you give me an extra 4 weeks to prepare for Ankalaev? The UFC said no, because we need a title fight now. Are you in? Are you out? And Glover said no. Lots to pick out of all of that. Where do you want to start, man? Because it was just bang news. It was just like this coming at me thick and fast, going, what the fuck is going on? Slow down. I can't keep up with everything that's going on with this situation. Where do you want to start? Yuri being out?
And then Yuri being out, I think, is the initial news, isn't it? The fact that Yuri's had to pull out because of shoulder surgery, which they said is minimum 6 months, maybe even 12 months. I've had a shoulder injury for the first time in my life right now that I'm still nursing through. I get it. Shoulders are a fucking nightmare, man, because you just can't get at all the ligaments and everything because they're underneath the bones of your shoulder. So the rehabilitation of a shoulder injury is really difficult. But full credit to him for going, right, I'm off the table for six, maybe 12 months. There's the belt. Crack on. I'll be back. I love that. I love that mentality of him. That's brilliant. And of course, he is the champion in recess, so he will get a shot at the win. Whoever owns the belt as soon as he comes back. That's the beauty of this sport, the beauty of the way it's set up. So that's the initial conversation, is the disappointment for him having to pull out, the respect that he gives up the belt. But my immediate thought to Glover Teixeira, I'm like, what was Glover thinking? Glover saying, no, but I need more time to face Ankalaev. Mate, you've been in this sport an awful long time. You know how this sport works. If you give up your challenger position and allow Jan Błachowicz to take over that challenger position and somebody new to fight for the belt, you are gambling on the fact that one of those guys is going to be a clear and decisive winner. You're also gambling on the fact that Yuri's going to be out for so long, you will get the next opportunity. That may not be the case, though. What if the next opportunity isn't you right away? What if there is a delay? What if the fight's incredibly close and they have to do a rematch because it was so fantastically close and they schedule a rematch for late spring, early summer, and then we get a decisive winner or a no contest? Yeah. What if this fight has to go to a fight number two for whatever reason? We get to spring, summer, and they do it again, Ankalaev versus Yan for the belt, and then we get a clear winner, and then Yuri goes, okay, I'm back now. So then Yuri fights for the belt at the back end of next year. So now we're at the end of 2023, and Glover Teixeira's like, wait a minute, I turned the shot down. Where's my shot? Sorry, son. Weird. Very strange, especially at this stage of his career as well.
Correct.
It's not like he hasn't seen every fucking style there is to see.
Yes. And that's the thing that is surprising, because at 43 years of age, to be turning down a title shot, all right, it's on short notice, and yet it is against a different style of opponent, but to be turning that down at this stage of his career is, it's concerning for him, because everybody wants, every fight fan wants Glover Teixeira to get the shot, right? I think because of our love for him and the emotional connection to him, you want to see him in that situation, but there is no room for sentimentality in the UFC. You know this. You've seen it on countless occasions. The UFC will not have that in their thought process. They are here purely to make the best fights available. Anthony Smith fighting Jamahal Hill. What if that's an absolute firecracker? What if that fight is an absolute firecracker and Dana goes, that guy's fighting for the title next?
Yeah.
So therefore, that person will jump into that situation. Let's be straight. Glover Teixeira is here because the first fight with Jiří Procházka was a very, very tight, close fight. He's not like he's been the light heavyweight champion, defended it for 10 times, and therefore earned that opportunity to be in that situation. He spent a career, obviously, building to this point, became champion, fought Jiří Procházka and fell short. Now we're in a situation where Jiří Procházka said, yeah, okay, we'll go again, Glover, because the first fight was tight and I got the job done in the fifth round. I want a conclusive ending. That's why we're in this situation having this rematch, or supposed to be having this rematch at UFC 282. Glover turning this down right now, I fear for him. I really do fear for him because, as you've just said, we don't know what's going to happen now at UFC 282. We don't know if there's going to be a conclusive ending. We don't know if at the end of all this, we're all going to say, oh my God, Ankalaev absolutely smoked Yan, or Yan absolutely smoked Ankalaev, bish, bash, bosh, it's back on. We nobody can know that situation. Sometimes you've got to carpe diem it, haven't you? You've got to seize the day. You've got to jump on that particular moment. So I don't know how this is going to play out now over the next 6 to 12 months for Glover Teixeira. Is he going to sit? Is he going to wait? Is he going to find someone else? Is he going to run the gauntlet? From Jan Blachowicz's point of view, obviously all his Christmases have come at once. He's thinking to himself, fuck, we're straight back into the mix. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely tremendous. And when you've got that amount of power, you absolutely have a chance against someone like Magomed Ankalaev, who I personally, believe will come through that fight. But Jan Blachowicz absolutely, at the stage of his career, what is he, 37, 38 years of age now, Jan?
Yeah,
this is his last chance saloon, so he's going to be absolutely pumped, ready to rock and roll come a week on Saturday. The whole situation was weird, like you've just said on Yuri. Nothing but the hat off to Yuri for moving the division on, saying, listen, lads, I know I'm the fucking guy. You guys crack on. I'll see you when I'm back.
Yeah,
I'll see you when I'm back. I love that attitude. Can't get enough of that. And absolutely every single fan, and even Dana will just be like, fucking Yuri's back in, man. What he did was sensational. He absolutely deserves that. So there's no problem from a Yuri point of view. Just concern for Glover making that decision.
Yeah, I can't get my head around the decision from Glover because, as you say, at this stage of his career, with all due respect, I think if it's the other way around, I would have understood it more. I think if he was due to defend the belt against Ankalaev, and Ankalaev pulled out injured, and he went, right, well, we're going to give you Jiří Procházka. I would get that, because as good as Ankalaev is, and I truly believe Ankalaev is the future of this weight division, I think Ankalaev technically ticks every box, but he's not massively, he's not like a massively unorthodox, dangerous striker, which is what I would class Jiří Procházka as, a guy that can switch your lights out with a spinning elbow or something mental that you've kind of got to prepare for. I think Jiří proved in the first fight that he was solid on the ground with Glover as well. There was some moments there he nearly tapped Glover out. I think he's a lot more rounded down there. He's got a couple of submission wins, everything else. There's Ankalaev, for as good as he is technically, He has got a loss to Paul Craig when he got submitted in the last 10 seconds. He doesn't have any submission wins on his record whatsoever. If I'm Glover Teixeira, I'm like, sound man, on paper, this guy's very good everywhere. Don't get me wrong, but he's untested at this level. Yeah. And he's got the weakness in his game appears to be the ground. Okay, not many people have been able to take him down, which is why he's had success. But he doesn't, you know, Ankalaev is a winning machine, but he is not a highlight reel machine.
No.
Ankalaev hasn't got a career littered with spin and back fist knockouts, with chokes, with everything else. The guy just knows how to win, man. And he just fucking does it like a robot. But I think if I'm Team Glover, I'm going, you know what? Ankalaev's easier for us stylistically than Jiří Prochazka, because Jiří knows what we're all about. He's been to the big stage. He's got the belt now. He's the A side, if you like. He's got a good ground game. He's unorthodox. Ankalaev, this is unknown territory for him. We can get into his head a little bit. We can break that, you know, that Dagestani fucking facade. We can get into him and get into his head a little bit. Let him know that, you know, you got tapped out by Paul Craig, son. You wait and see what I've got for you. Like Glover, it just surprised me that where he is in his career, he's gone, you know what? Let that one pass by, and you know, I'll be there next year. Mate, there might not be a next year for you, man. This is your Indian summer. Like we've already said, it's incredible that you're still competing at this level at your age after the journey you've been on. Your legacy's assured. You've won the title, everything else. Great. If you're going to ride off into the sunset, just ride. Go now. If you're going to stick around because you truly want the belt, for me, Ankalaev, for someone like Glover at this stage, is on paper easier fight than Jiří Prochazka. So to not take the fight when his weakness is your wheelhouse is very strange, man. Very, very strange. My only thought is, has Glover got a knock? Is Glover not 100%? And is he using this as an opportunity to go, you know what? Let Jan go.
Yeah, but he offered to fight Jan in December.
But I won't fight Ankalaev.
Yeah, I know he's beating Jan and he beat it relatively easy. And the UFC pushed back, said, we've seen it before and it wasn't the most attractive of fights. It wasn't, because Jan just didn't turn up on that particular night, did he?
Yeah.
So I can fully understand.
Listen, there's a thing there that he's got a game plan for Jan. I've got a game plan for Jan. I know what I did there. Whereas Ankalaev, it might be a bit more like, right, well, this kid hasn't even been on our radar really, because the way we've seen it, we beat Jiří, we ride off into the sunset, or we have one last big night in Brazil, and then we're done. Like, I ain't running through the Ankalaevs. I'm at the end. I know I'm at the end. Maybe that's the case. Maybe he's gone, you know what? I ain't game plan for that motherfucker. I've got no idea how to face him. This is not for me then. I don't know. It's a very strange situation with Glover.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got ourselves a new main event for UFC 282. It will be Jan Błachowicz versus Magomed Ankalaev, which we'll preview on next week's show for you. So make sure you stick around for that. Paddy the Baddy, boosted to co-main events.
Crazy.
Dog shit, Paddy. Sloppy shit, Paddy.
How good was that? How good was that?
Is that Paddy the Baddy? Yeah. Yeah, love. My dog's done a sloppy shit on your drive. Amazing.
Oh, what a guy. What a guy.
What a guy indeed. Listen, the other piece of news that I wanted to talk about was Conor McGregor and USADA. This seems to just keep going. Every day, something pops up on my timeline where people are talking about Conor McGregor and USADA. And I suppose that Conor's kind of added a little bit of fuel to that fire because he said on social media a week ago or whatever, I will be back ready to get into the testing pool in February. Two tests. And I am ready to rock and roll, insinuating that USADA had granted him some type of special circumstances in order to obviously come out of the pool whilst he rehabilitates, go back into the pool and not go through the 6-month testing period as everybody else would do. And obviously just have two tests and then book himself a fight and crack on. And this has obviously caused loads of debate within the MMA community. I've got loads of thoughts on this. Tons of it. First and foremost, because the reason why this is all kicked off is because Anthony Smith, I think he was talking to Bisping, wasn't he, on Bisping's podcast? I think they were both having a little bit of a back and forth, having a bit of a chat about it. And Anthony Smith said that it stinks and it shouldn't be allowed and it's wrong and it makes me feel uneasy and all this type of stuff. And then Conor's obviously responded to Anthony Smith. This is how this is all blown up over the period of time. I believe that ESPN have spoken to spokespeople at USADA and they've said that the special circumstances, the exemption isn't in play for Conor McGregor. If he's coming back, he'll have to be in the testing pool for 6 months. Right, here's a few thoughts that I've got, just spitballing off the top of my head with this. Conor McGregor suffered a horrific injury. Horrific injury. Leg snapped in half in front of all our eyes. We all saw it. His leg was hanging off. Horrible. Obviously, we've experienced it in the past with Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman. We've seen those guys before. We've had conversations, especially with Chris Weidman, who is still suffering from that injury now. It's affecting his everyday life. It's most certainly affected his mixed martial arts career. That's just the side note. I'm talking about his everyday life, the pain and the struggles that he has with movement and mobility off the back of that horrific injury that he suffered against in the UFC with the leg break. Conor McGregor suffered a leg break like that. My take on this is, first and foremost, sort yourself out. Whatever it takes, whatever the treatment is, whatever the drugs that are needed, whatever the rehabilitation process is advised by any type of doctor away from competition, get that leg sorted. There is no point in having a fucking $1 billion in the bank if you're hobbling around and you can't go and bloody enjoy it. If you can't enjoy your life after the life that you have given to mixed martial arts because of a horrific injury like that and you have not rehabilitated properly, then what's the fucking point? Let's be straight. If you've got to go to whatever levels you've got to go to in order to get that sorted, get that sorted. That's my first and foremost process. So anybody criticizing him saying, oh, he's used this or he's used that or he's done this or he's done that, couldn't give a fuck, man. Is he back to full fitness? Is he back to any type of pre-Dustin Poirier 3 fight health? If that's the case, then I'm all for whatever he's done. Now, the flip of that is that now we're now talking about getting back into competition. That's what we're talking about, aren't we? Now, first and foremost, there has to be transparency with why Conor McGregor came out of the USADA testing pool. Because that's the whole point of USADA, is that it was brought in to work with the UFC for transparency. That's what we were all here for, weren't we? It's 365 days a year. It's 24/7. We can turn up whenever. We can test you whenever. You can go on a website now. You can type an athlete's name into that website, and I can see how many times that athlete has been tested by USADA and how many tested passed over this year, last year, or since USADA have been involved in the UFC. Transparency. That's what we all want. Now, obviously, this started last year when people were going on that website and they were seeing Conor McGregor's not been tested. Conor McGregor's still ranked. This is where all this, the murkiness is in, right? This is where the problem is, right? Because what should have happened at that time, he said, listen, right? We all have seen Conor's injury. Look at it. His fucking leg's hanging off. If we allow that to heal naturally, he's never going to be able to fight again to the levels that he wants to be able to fight again. And his life's going to be affected. So what we are going to do, we are going to have to take him out of the USADA testing pool because there's things that he's going to have to do to his body that are not in coherence with the USADA testing rules and regulations. He needs to come out of that, come out of being an athlete, come out of the ranking system, and he needs to go and get himself sorted, right? As in a retired fighter. That's how it should have been treated, and that's how it should have been portrayed to everybody. Go and do that. Conor goes away, gets himself sorted, gets himself back to full fitness. When he's ready to get back to competition, then he should have to dance to the tune that every other athlete has to dance to. I don't care how big of a pay-per-view star he is. I don't care how much money he's going to make. There shouldn't be a special exemption. He should be able to have to dance to the same tune that Henry Cejudo, for example, has just had to dance to. Henry Cejudo is a multi-weight world champion, Olympic gold medalist. All right, he's not suffered a major injury, but he's been retired. He's been out the testing pool. He could have been doing whatever he fucking wanted to be doing. He has to go through the process of a six-month clean program, get back in the pool. 6 months, I'll turn up whenever I fucking want to turn up to test your sunshine. And if you're sweet as a nut, if you consistently for 6 months piss clean, then I'll book you a fight. That should have been the process, and that process should have been made public. Not all this smoke and dagger behind closed doors, sneaky, sneaky type shit that everybody... That should not have been the case. I completely agree with Conor going through whatever medical needs he needed in order to get himself sorted. But if he wants to come back and compete at the very highest level of mixed martial arts, he has to go through the current protocol, which is 6 months of clean piss. That's what he's got to do.
Yeah, but not everybody has done that in history, have they?
In history, yeah, but in the you're talking. Are you talking pre-USADA?
No, I point you back towards Brock Lesnar. When Brock Lesnar was brought back in July 2016 for UFC 200 to take on Mark Hunt, he wasn't part of the testing pool for 6 months. He was satellited in, and in fact, that actually came back and bit UFC in the arse because they had to test them around the event. And after the event, he popped hot for fucking clemophene or whatever it is, one of the steroids. So all Connor is talking about is what has been precedent in the past. He's like, listen, don't judge me like a Henry Cejudo. Don't judge me like any normal fighter. I'm in the same category as your Brock Lesnar's. When I'm ready to come back, I just come back in. I don't need to be this and that because it's what the UFC have set precedent before. I believe everything you just said is right. Everything is right. You should be in the pool for 6 months. You should have to prove that he's clean, that his systems, there's nothing in his system that would positively impact on his performance. I completely agree with you. But the UFC did it before with Brock Lesnar. So if you're Conor McGregor, mate, well, they'll do it the same with me then. When I'm ready, I'll just go, right, UFC, yeah, International Fight Week, beat me in, I'm ready, let's go. Boom. And it won't be, because it's been done before. It's not right.
Well, listen, transparency is what's needed. The whole process here has not been transparent for fans. So therefore, we're still like going, what's happening here? Is he in? Is he out? He's still ranked. He's not in the testing pool, but he's still ranked. That shouldn't be the case.
No. Well, John Jones is still ranked. John Jones is still ranked in the pound for pound fucking top 15. Yeah, and he hasn't fought since 1982. Yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. There's got to be some kind of ruling where if you're inactive for more than 18 months, you are no longer ranked in any weight division. It's mental. And if you're outside the testing pool, if you say I'm no longer being tested, well, that should automatically disqualify you from the ranking system as well. I'm not saying when you do go back in the testing pool, people aren't then go, okay, well, I still believe Connor's top 10. I'll put him back in my top 10. No. Cool. But if you're not in the testing pool, then in theory, you're not on the bench. You're not available for selection. So you ain't active. Therefore, you shouldn't be allowed to be ranked.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about some kung fu?
Please.
Because this weekend's main event is basically just kung fu. This is all it is. You've got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, a sensational karate combatant, taking on a kung fu specialist in Kevin Holland. This is mad. This fight is just fucking batshit crazy. Because Kevin Holland told me that he was retiring. Yeah, on my way now. That's it now. I'm out of here. I thought he was just going to go and fight bad guys on the streets and like go and catch a load of baddies and shit. Nope. The UFC made the call. They said, "Do you fancy fighting Wonderboy? Having a little bit of a dance with Wonderboy, mate." Stylistically, it just works because all they want to do is punch and kick. Nobody wants to roll around on the floor in this fight. They just want to have a bit of a punch and a kick off, don't they? Tremendous. If you like striking, this is the fight to watch at the weekend. Superb.
Yeah, man, I'm all in for it. I think it's a great fight. I don't know what the big connotations are for the welterweight division, but it's fun.
Yeah,
absolutely all over it. Two of the best welterweights in the world going at it. Kevin Holland looks so much better at this weight. This is his natural best, his best weight division. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson cannot be ruled out by anybody because on his day, he can make anybody look daft. So yeah, I'm all in for it, man, especially from a striking perspective. There's no way this five-rounder touches the canvas. If it does, it's because someone's been kicked or knocked on their ass. It's a great fight.
And even when that happens, the other one will just stand there and say, "Get up." Let's go. Nobody's following anybody in. Nobody's following anybody in. Go on, get up. Let's go again. I think as a card, this is a really, really attractive card, man. I'm just disappointed that there's not. Is this Florida?
Yeah. This is the way fight nights are going to look in 2023 all the time. This is the same ilk as London and Paris and the last card that was in Florida. This is fans are back, baby. And look at this card. This card reflects that as well. It's a belter.
Well, if you put in a fight night in front of fans, you bring out Tattoo of Asa, don't you? That's what you
do. Right, you do.
Against Sergei Pavlovich. I'm so interested to see where Ty's at, man, because obviously he gave us a great fight against Cyril Gane. He just got outclassed on that night. Cyril was tremendous. But Ty tagged him. maybe he takes a little bit of confidence from being able to touch someone like Cyril and cause that amount of mayhem in that second round into a fight with Sergey Pavlovich. Great fight.
He can bang, though, Pavlovich as well, though, man. Jesus Christ.
Just as a fight, it's fantastic. I'm looking down the list, right? You've got Eric Anders taking on Kyle Daukaus. Marcin Kjaer's on this against Michael Johnson.
Oh, of course he is. Oh, boy. Manchester, stand up, man. If Brent, inspired by Brendan Loughnane, that's what Marcin Kjaer is going to be this weekend. Obviously,
he's Leeds. Have massive... you got Manchester stand up? He's the Leeds boy.
Marcin Kjaer?
Yeah, he's Yorkshire. Oh, he's fucking
hell. Yeah, I'm, do you know what? I'm fucking
thinking... You were thinking of Lerone then, weren't
Lerone
you?
Lerone Murphy, yeah. I'm thinking of Lerone Murphy, yeah, of course.
We need him medically cleared. We need Lerone medically cleared to get himself back in the UFC, man.
I know, I'm missing him, man.
I'm sick of running against him on the treadmill because he's fucking just too good. I need him out my gym and back in a proper gym. That's when I need him. He's grafting away on the treadmills in the local gym. Derek Brunson, Jack Hermanson's an interesting fight. Normally, I mean, they're both elite grapplers. Do you think it's going to be a bit of a stand-up bang?
No, Derek Brunson's out, dude.
Has he pulled out?
He's out, yeah. He pulled out with an injury. Roman Dolidze is fighting now. Jack Hermanson's fighting Roman Dolidze.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, yeah. So therefore, Jack Hermanson can't keep an opponent.
So therefore, Jack Hermanson's definitely going to try and grapple because you do not want to be standing with Roman Dolidze because he's just coming off the back of a sensational knockout victory.
Exactly. But he can grapple as well, man. He's got decent jiu-jitsu as well, Dolidze. Decent ground game. So that's a really interesting fight. That Nicolai versus Schnell is a good fight as well in the flyweight division. This card is absolutely laced. Absolutely laced. Darren Elkins, Jonathan Pierce. You know, these are fights that will hit. Like this is a fight night that's guaranteed to deliver, I'm telling you.
It kind of sets us up nicely to a good end of the year because, as I've said, after December the 17th, which again is another wonderful card to finish off the year, there is no UFC right through till the January the 14th. That's so unusual. What did he do? What's Dana up to? Eh? Go on a holiday?
Yeah. How dare
he? What's he doing? Mate, I know that you kept the show rolling during the bloody pandemic whilst everybody else was not doing fuck up, but that's taking the piss. 4 weeks. What are you up to, you lad? Jeez. Wait till I see him. The next 3 weeks are littered with fantastic UFC action. And this weekend's main event, Wonderboy versus Kevin Holland, everything, hopefully everything goes to plan. Because there's a stylistic matchup, two lads on the feet, you kick, you punch, I'll kick, I'll punch. And let's see what happens. I think we're in for a cracking fight. I really do. And good luck to everybody that is taking a nice pair of trainers to Florida at the weekend because Ty Tuivasa will be asking you for it, no doubt, post-fight. don't take your box fresh stuff. Take your old pair. Next week, we preview UFC 282. Two Scousers taking over Las Vegas, it seems, with Paddy Pimblett being boosted to the co-main event of UFC 282 in the aftermath of what we just were speaking about with the light heavyweight division. And Darren Till taking on Dricus du Plessis. Just a quick one on Till before we give him a full preview next week. There's something there, man. It's bubbling. I know we've said this a few times, but I'm feeling it this time. I really am feeling it. And people are seeing it. You can see it. On his social media, I think this is the best version of Till that we've seen for a bit.
Yeah, according to ESPN as well, they've completely reshuffled the card with the main event dropping off. And Till is now on the main card as well. So you've got Jan Blachowicz versus Ankalaev, Paddy Pimblett versus Jared Gordon, Robbie Lawler versus Santiago Ponzinibbio, Darren Till versus Dricus du Plessis, and Bryce Mitchell versus Ilya Topura kicking off. That is your main card for UFC 282. So two Scousers on the main card in Las Vegas. Sign me the fuck up.
Shit the bed. Shit the bed indeed.
Exciting.
Exciting times, man. Exciting times. Thank you very much for listening to us. This one's just all been about Brendan. Let's be honest. It's all been about Brendan Loughnane. Hopefully you enjoyed that. as much as we enjoyed that, obviously, on Friday night. This week will be good for the UFC, and then we roll on into some more British interest next week as well. So make sure you come back and join us. You can subscribe on our YouTube channel. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. We're across the website on fightdisciples.com for all our feeds, everything, including all our social media. We are on TikTok, aren't we, eh, lad? Hey?
Oh, do you know what? I forgot.
I know you did. I know you did, right? Because I went on this week and I thought, he hasn't uploaded anything, right? So I put something up there for the TikTokers. And it was just a little bit of last week's podcast. He'll do so. He'll, at some point, there will be some TikTok on there for you when he can be bothered to do it.
I forgot we had TikTok. Oh, my
well,
God.
Well, we have a TikTok. The Fight Disciples on TikTok. Please, follow us on there.
I'll post a dance or something later today for you.
I'll tell you what. What I'll do... I know this is the MMA podcast. I'm at the... I know it's not a fucking major event, but the Fury Chisora thing this week. So if there's any fucking thing interesting knocking about, if any MMA dudes are on there, I'll TikTok it. I'll get a bit of TikTok on there for people. All right? So there will be some exclusive content coming to TikTok very, very soon. We are going to be putting our reaction cams on there. So when we do go to events, when we are at fights, the reaction cams will go on to our TikTok. So... you're a fucking idiot. Anyway, you can subscribe on iTunes as well. If you're on iTunes, please write us a 5-star review. It just helps with the visibility in the iTunes chart, so more people get to play a part of our nonsense. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.